Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Ugh, spam calls. Sound familiar? Introducing Line 2. Get a second phone number right on your existing phone. Imagine discounts, appointments, online forms. Handle it all without giving out your personal number. It's like having a secret weapon against spam. And when those unwanted calls sneak through, boom, blocked. No more interruptions, no more stress. Stay connected, stay protected. Keep your main number safe and out of harm's way. Ready to take back your phone? Visit line2.com/audio or download Line 2 in the App Store today.
All the blood. All the pain. All the blood, all the pain.
Hey, Crime Salad listeners, welcome back to another episode of Crime Salad, where we talk true crime. My name is Ashley.
And I'm Ricky.
And we're a little bit sick this week, so apologies if we sound a little
I sound great.
Anyways, we have two lovely patrons to shout out. Ricky?
We have Charlie and Nikki.
Thank you both so much for supporting our show. We really appreciate it. Enjoy the ad-free listens. All right, well, let's jump into this week's episode. At just 21 years old, Samantha Josephson was set to graduate from the University of South Carolina in just a few months and had just received the news that she got a full scholarship to Drexel University School of Law. And then on March 29th, 2019, Samantha had received some concerning news about the health of a close family member. Because of the mixed news, she wasn't really in a celebrating mood and had asked her boyfriend Greg Corbishley to make the 2.5-hour drive from Charleston, South Carolina to see her. But Samantha was scheduled to visit Greg just 2 days later, so instead, he suggested that she, you know, enjoy the night with a few friends at a local college hangout, and he would see her in a few days. He thought a change in scenery would be a good distraction until the weekend. The two had been dating for 2 years and were making plans for a future together beyond school. Greg had graduated from USC the year prior, and he had plans to job hunt and relocate to Pittsburgh while Samantha attended Drexel Law School. With reluctance, Samantha decided to join her roommates out to the Five Crowns District in downtown Columbia. They all drove together to a friend's house located nearby, and from there, they all walked over to their favorite hangout, the Bird Dog Bar. Throughout the night, Samantha and Greg remained in close contact, FaceTiming several times and constantly texting one another. Samantha's roommate, Tegan, remembered looking over at Samantha a few times throughout the night and noticed her off in a corner with her phone. After a few drinks, Samantha wanted to go home while her roommates weren't quite done for the night. She told them that she was going to call an Uber and head back home to their apartment complex. And while Samantha was waiting for her Uber to arrive, she made a phone call to Greg one more time to tell him that she loved him and he was her person. That phone call ended at 2:04 a.m. and it would be the last time Greg ever heard Samantha's voice again. When Samantha's Uber finally did arrive, she texted him again to let him know that she was on her way home. The two could track one another on an iPhone app called Find My Friends. Greg immediately began tracking Samantha when he noticed she was heading in the opposite direction of where she lived, which was just 10 minutes away from the bar. So as a result, Greg called her to find out why she was heading in the wrong direction. But this call went unanswered. So he texted Samantha, and those texts were delivered, but never had the red icon, which showed that Samantha had neither opened nor read them. About 5 miles from her home on Montgomery Drive, Samantha's phone suddenly stopped sharing its location with Greg or anyone else. Greg began to worry, so he called one of Samantha's roommates and asked if she was home yet. They were still out having fun, and they told him that Samantha probably left her phone in the Uber, and the driver must have turned it off.
What did you think was happening at this point?
And I really didn't know what to think. I thought maybe she left her phone in an Uber and the Uber went home. I called her roommates to ask, you know, do you know if she's home? Are you guys home? I didn't really know what to think at this point. I just kept trying to call her just to see if she would answer.
And did you actually end up speaking to her roommates at all?
Yeah, I think I had some texts with them around 3 or 3:30. I don't really remember the time, but I had told them that I had told them the situation, and I think they came to the same conclusion or assumption that I did, that maybe she dropped her phone or something like that. But
when Samantha's roommates returned home, they noticed that Samantha wasn't home yet. Her door was open, and her work shoes were lined up, which she needed the next day for her shift as a waitress at the Liberty Tavern. They thought that this was odd, so they too checked Samantha's location on the Find My Friends app. One of her roommates, named Tegan, also noticed that it stopped responding on Montgomery Street about 5 miles from their apartment. Tegan called the jail to see if Samantha had been arrested, and she also called the hospitals to see if Samantha had been injured. She began to worry, so Tegan and her friends went to the last known location of Samantha's phone, and they looked around for signs of their missing roommate. They decided there was probably a good explanation, and they told Greg that they were heading home and would call him when Samantha finally arrived home. Greg finally went to sleep around 5:30 in the morning and was awakened around 11:30 a.m. by Samantha's roommates. Samantha still hadn't returned home, so they called her job to see if she had shown up for work or maybe called in sick. It was just unlike Samantha to just not show up, because she was a very reliable employee. That's when Greg helped Tegan to break into Samantha's laptop. There, they discovered in her messaging app that Samantha's Uber had canceled by the driver due to the fact that Samantha never showed up. That is when Greg called Samantha's parents, and everyone headed to South Carolina to look for her. Tegan was under the impression that she had to wait 24 hours before they could report Samantha missing. This isn't true. However, because of this mistaken belief, the roommates, along with Greg, headed down to the Five Crowns District, and they began asking shop owners if they could look at the security footage. It was while at the Bird Dog that they saw Samantha wearing an orange top, black pants, and wedge shoes, waiting outside for her Uber. On the footage, there are crowds of bar patrons, but you can see that Samantha is waiting alone for her ride and periodically looking at her phone, making a phone call, and texting. All of that activity lined up with Greg's phone. At one point on the video, you can see Samantha head over to a silver sedan, open the back door, and then realize that she made a mistake and close the door. All the while, there is a black Chevy Impala circling the block. That car can see Samantha mistakenly try to get into the wrong car. The Impala driver quickly makes a U-turn down a one-way street and pulls in where the silver sedan pulled away. Samantha gets into the back seat, and she is never seen alive again. Greg and Samantha's roommates made flyers, and then they went back to that location, Montgomery Street, looking for that black Chevy Impala and looking for any sign of Samantha. They canvassed the entire neighborhood, and they knocked on every door looking for their friend. Just as they were ready to organize a searching party, they were each called by the Columbia Police Department to come down to the police station and be individually interviewed. So while they were out searching for their friend, Samantha's parents had filed a missing persons report. After the interviews were complete, Greg and Samantha's roommates were called into a conference room with Marcy and Seymour Josephson, Samantha's parents. There, they were told that Samantha had been found 65 miles away in a secluded area only known to locals.
Samantha's dad was devastated and made a Facebook post letting everyone know that Samantha had been found. It stated, "It is with tremendous sadness and a broken heart that I post this. I will miss and love my baby girl for the rest of life. Samantha is no longer with us, but she will not be forgotten. It is extremely hard to write this and post it, but I love her with all of my heart. I could continue to write about her, but it kills me. I sit here and I cry while looking at the picture and writing this." While her friends and family were doing all that they could to find Samantha, a body was discovered 65 miles away in Clarendon County by a local turkey hunter. Andrew Lee and his friend Edward Ryan Knowlton were out hunting turkeys that day near New Zion on Edward's family's land. In fact, Samantha was found off a dirt road only known to two property owners who shared the land. As they were heading back to their car, something caught Andrew Lee's eye. He stared at it for a minute, and the longer that he looked at it, the more he realized it was a body. He called Ryan over, and they were both in shock at the discovery. The property was so remote, they weren't sure how to lead authorities to their discovery. They decided to call a family friend with the Department of Natural Resources and waited for law enforcement to arrive. When police arrived, they saw a female face down who had clearly been dragged over to the trees from the private road. The road only known to and used by the local area farms. Samantha was found face down with her shirt over her head and her shoes were hanging off her feet by her ankles. She was covered in stab wounds from the bottom of her feet to the top of her head. She also had defensive wounds on her hands and several nails were broken off. Samantha had fought hard against her attacker. She was soaked in blood from head to toe, to the point that police were uncertain of the color of her shirt. It was clear from the area that Samantha had been killed somewhere else and merely dumped. At first, police weren't sure of her identity until they received a missing persons report out of Columbia. They received a photo from the Columbia Police Department and confirmed that Samantha was no longer missing. The forensic pathologist, Thomas Beaver, stated that Samantha had been stabbed over 120 times all over her body in a frenzied attack. Some of her wounds included two fatal stab wounds to her carotid artery, her neck, her ear, and one stab wound penetrated her skull and went into her brain cavity. The pathologist surmised that it would have taken Samantha over 20 minutes to die from her wounds since only living bodies bleed, and Samantha's wounds were described as significant bloodletting. In fact, Samantha's body had less than 2 tablespoons of blood left in her entire body. The pathologist stated it was a vicious attack with an odd-shaped instrument. Some wounds were made with a blade, but other wounds were made with a double pyramid-shaped object. He thought perhaps the knife had broken off in Samantha's body, which is what caused the attacker to use another instrument. However, after x-raying the body, he couldn't find a knife tip. He said he wouldn't be able to guess the weapon until one was found and he could match it to her wounds.
As soon as the police reviewed the security footage obtained by Greg and Samantha's roommates, they put a bolo out on the black Chevy Impala with the distinctive rear spoiler. Bolo stands for Be on the Lookout. Just 24 hours after Samantha had been abducted, an observant police officer saw a black Chevy Impala circling the same Five Points area where Samantha mistakenly got into the car with an apex predator she mistook for an Uber driver. So, as soon as the car pulled over, police could smell marijuana. and the officer asked the driver and his female passenger which one of you is smoking weed. The driver, 24-year-old Nathan Rowland, stated that he had smoked some earlier. From the body cam footage, the canine officer asked Nathaniel to step out of the car for a minute. As he does, the officer tells him to take his hand out of his pocket and says, "Get your hand out of your pocket. What are you, stupid or something?" Apparently, he was stupid because as soon as Nathaniel took his hand out of his pocket, the officer said, "The reason I pulled you over is because your car matches the suspect's vehicle from the news." And as soon as the police officer speaks those words, Nathaniel takes off running. The officer can be heard saying, "Release the dog," but it would take 30 minutes before Nathaniel was found and brought into custody. While officers were looking for Nathaniel, the arresting officer looked, and what he saw made him call for immediate backup and a crime scene unit. The car was covered in blood, and lying on the back seat was a container of liquid bleach, antibacterial wipes, and window cleaner. The car also contained Samantha's cell phone and a large amount of blood all over the back seat and on the floor. Of significant note was the fact that the child locks had been engaged on the Impala, which meant once Samantha mistakenly entered the Impala, there was no feasible exit. She was trapped. Police quickly learned that Nathaniel lived in New Zion, and his family owned one of the properties across from where Samantha's body had been found. He graduated from East Clarendon High School, where he played basketball and attended the South Carolina State University in 2007 before dropping out. It was there at college where he met the passenger in his car, 24-year-old Maria Howard. At first, Maria was uncooperative with law enforcement, but eventually she told officers everything she knew, and it turned out she held a very important piece of the puzzle. Maria and Nathaniel had been exclusively dating for almost a year, and he would often stay with her in her apartment along with her 4-year-old daughter. On the evening of the 28th, Maria went to bed around 1:30 a.m., the last time she saw Nathaniel was on her couch playing video games. When she woke up the next morning, Nathaniel was nowhere to be found. This was a problem because Maria needed to be at work at McDonald's, and Nathaniel had half of her uniform in his car. He was also her ride to work. By 7 a.m., she was already late when she was forced to call her mother for a ride. Just as she was talking to her mother, Nathaniel showed up, and he had the same clothes on that he was wearing the night before, a gray Puma tracksuit and red and black Nike slides. He also looked like he hadn't slept all night. When she asked for her uniform, he said that he needed to take his nephew to school first and would be right back. His nephew lived over 30 minutes away, yet Nathaniel was back in just 10 minutes with Maria's work shirt, which was soaking wet. So she did her best to squeeze out the excess water and had no other choice other than to wear it. Now, the night before, Nathaniel had promised to take her shirt to his cousin's house and wash it and dry it. Instead, it looked wet and unwashed. Maria had also left her work visor in the back window of the Impala, and when she looked for it, it was missing. She asked Nathaniel where it was, and he said it was out in the country, covered in blood. When she asked, "Why was it covered in blood?" he said, "Mind your business." That is when she began taking a closer look around the car. The back seat was completely covered in a sheet. There was a small uncovered section that appeared to be saturated in dry blood. She looked at the floor and the car dash, and that too appeared to be covered in dry blood. Nathaniel had to stop for gas on the way, and while he was there, he pulled out a Leatherman multifunction pocket tool. This is a tool that can turn into pliers, which can form a pyramid shape, as well as a knife and other tools like a handy can opener and a screwdriver. Maria said that this tool was covered in blood and hair, and Nathaniel was wiping it off with germ wipes to clean the tool, as well as the dash area and gear shift, which were also covered in blood. Maria asked him where all this blood came from, assuming maybe he hit a dog. His response was the same. He said, "Mind your business." That's when Maria spotted what looked like a brand new iPhone she described as belonging to a woman because it was rose gold. When she asked where it came from, Nathaniel told her that he had bought it for her. However, Maria was an Android user and had no use for this phone. Later at trial, it would be discovered that Nathaniel went into a cellular shop and tried to sell this phone. The owner of the shop checked the serial number, which hadn't been yet reported stolen, and offered to purchase the new-looking iPhone 7 Plus for $120. However, Nathaniel wanted substantially more, and the two couldn't agree on a price. Now, Maria went to work expecting Nathaniel to pick her up at the end of the day, but he never showed up. Instead, Maria had to call her mother for a ride, and when she came home, she found Nathaniel sleeping. It appeared that he had been sleeping all day. Maria was angry, but she needed to pick up her 4-year-old daughter from daycare. Nathaniel didn't want her to use the car because the back seat was still covered in blood. Maria had no other choice and placed the car seat in the back of the car to pick up her daughter. Later, she noticed that her daughter had blood on the bottom of her pink shoes. A few days later, the police served a search warrant on Maria's home. And in the dumpster behind her apartment complex, they found bloody clothing belonging to Nathaniel, including that gray Puma tracksuit and the red and black Nike slides. They also found the same bloody Leatherman tool that Maria had watched him attempt to clean. It still had Samantha's blood and hair attached, and the knife on the tool had been bent. A bed sheet was also recovered from the trash bin behind Maria's house, which had both blood stains and cleaning stains from bleach. A matching pillowcase was also found in Maria's upstairs closet, which also contained Samantha's blood. A khaki shirt found in the same trash can was shown with what looks like blood on the bottom, and a towel also covered in Samantha's blood. Another piece of evidence was a pair of pink children's shoes that were found in the closet inside the home. These shoes belonged to Maria's 4-year-old daughter. Soon after the discovery of all of this evidence came to light, Nathaniel's family spoke out on his behalf. His father said if his son did this crime, he would want him to be held accountable. However, he was sure that his son had nothing to do with the crime. In fact, he believed his son had been framed. He told reporters, quote, "If he did it, I'd be the first one to put him behind bars, lock him up, and throw away the key." End quote. His mother, Loretta Rawland, described her son as a very caring man who went through high school and college and was active in his church. She told reporters, quote, "Now I know as a mother and a mother knows her child, I know my son didn't do this." End quote. Henry Rawland, Nathaniel's father, reported that his son told him that he had been at a party on the evening of Samantha's disappearance and that he had passed out. When he woke up at 2:30 a.m., he said he couldn't find his car keys, which he usually kept in his pocket. When he went outside, he found the keys inside the car, which we now know was covered in Samantha's blood. He believed while he was sleeping, someone he knew took his car and used it to kidnap and kill Samantha. He said he was too scared to go to the police, and within a day, his car was on the news and with images that were too grainy to identify a driver. He didn't think he would be believed, so he tried his best to clean up the crime scene and forget it ever happened. Of course, at trial, this alibi wasn't offered as a defense. Instead, his defense consisted of an unknown assailant due to unidentified DNA found under Samantha's fingernails. Now, we know that Nathaniel had been involved in another kidnapping. 5 months earlier, on October 19, 2018, in Richland County, Nathaniel tried to pawn a game console stolen during another woman's kidnapping. In that case, the unnamed victim told police that two men carjacked her while she was at a traffic light in Columbia. The men physically assaulted her and then forced her to drive to an ATM to withdraw money. The two suspects made her drive them back to her own home, where the game console, along with other items, were taken from her home before they fled. Hours later, police say that Nathaniel sold some of those items, including the PlayStation 4 game console, at a local pawn shop. Police arrested Nathaniel for receiving and selling stolen goods. However, the woman couldn't identify him, so he couldn't be charged with the carjacking, abduction, or robbery. 28 months after Samantha's murder, Nathaniel Rowland finally went to trial. And during the trial, we learned some new things, including that someone dressed in a black leather jacket wearing black and red Nike slides and black gloves tried to use Samantha's ATM card over 9 times. It appears that Samantha gave the killer the wrong PIN number, which frustrated him. During opening statements, the Richland County prosecutor gave the jury a preview of the damning evidence they had against the defendant, which included surveillance camera footage of Samantha entering the defendant's car, as well as the defendant's girlfriend, who we know watched him clean out his car after Samantha's murder. The prosecutor told the jury that the footage captured the defendant circling the block multiple times before pulling up in front of Samantha, who was waiting alone. He stated that, quote, as she stood there waiting for that Uber, he had his eyes firmly fixated on her, end quote. He told the jury it was clear that Samantha had, quote, fought back, kicking and punching and clawing the person attacking her, end quote. In opening statements by the defense attorney, Alicia Good told the jury that she agreed with the prosecutor that Samantha had fought, and she had fought hard. So hard that her nails were broken, and there were DNA evidence underneath them. However, there was no DNA evidence found anywhere on Samantha's body that matched the defendant. She told the jury to have an open mind and consider that the unknown DNA found by the crime lab belonged to the actual assailant. But what she didn't mention was that Samantha's DNA was found all over the defendant, including under his fingernails. The trial took just 6 days, including closing arguments. The jury deliberated just 107 minutes before finding Nathaniel Rowland guilty for the kidnapping, robbery, and first-degree murder of Samantha Josephson. The judge invited the jury to stay for the sentencing hearing, which began right away. In an uncharacteristic move, the Columbia County Sheriff gave a victim impact statement to the judge saying that the depravity and violence inflicted on Samantha Josephson would stay with him and his employees for the remainder of their lives, as well as the impact the Josephson family had on him and his department. Next, Marcy Josephson spoke. She told the judge that, as a mother, you worry and pray that your child will be safe, happy, and healthy. Her dreams were my dreams, and her death was my death.
I close my eyes, and I feel what she endured at his hands 120 times, over and over and over, fighting for her life locked in his car. I used to have dreams for her. Now all I have are nightmares 120 times. The final moments, her bare feet kicking and fighting for her life. I visualize the blood flowing from her body, her beautiful body, 120 times for what? The $35 a college student has in her bank account? The loss of Sammy is beyond words. There'll be no more birthday parties, backyard gatherings, holiday celebrations, or activities to share with her. I was planning my trip to Columbia in 2019 to watch my daughter graduate from college. Instead, I went to Columbia to gather her belongings. I cannot watch my daughter graduate from law school, get married, or have children, all of which were her dreams. Her laughter, hugs, guidance, advice, and opportunities to tell her I love her are gone. Our family of four is forever broken. All I have are memories of the past and thoughts about what her final moments on earth must have been like. He erased my future with Sammy, but he cannot touch my memories. The excruciating pain he put her through is unimaginable. I pray that when Sammy closed her eyes, she thought of beautiful things. His evil face was not the last thing she saw before she took her last breath. I pray that her grandparents and uncle wrapped her in their loving.
From family and friends. In here are over 90 impact statements of friends and family of how they've been devastated for the last 28 months. I only wish that you read these, of how impactful it has hit my community, my friends, and my family. I have this here for you if you wish to read at any time.
Yeah, I do. I wish to read it. I'd love to, if you would hand it up, please.
You heard that right. A book of 90 impact statements. Samantha's father broke down and told the judge that his life had been shattered and destroyed, and there were many times he contemplated taking his own life so that he could be with Sammy again. He stated he knows that decision would be unfair to his wife and daughter, so he continues to fight the urge. Throughout his statement, like his wife, he refused to speak the defendant's name. Instead, he referred to him as the monster. He ended his statement by asking the judge to give the defendant the longest possible sentence so he would never be allowed to hurt another person as long as he lived. Finally, Nathaniel's mother spoke, and she had heard enough and was angry at the way her son was being talked about. She didn't get more than a few words into her statement before she was interrupted by the judge. In fact, twice the judge interrupted her and told her that after listening to the overwhelming amount of evidence against her son, coupled with the fact that the jury just found him guilty, he wouldn't entertain any comments regarding her son's innocence. The judge went on to describe how he has seen many crimes and murder cases, but this one stands out, being that he stabbed his victim 120 times, and how he can understand how his family is in complete disbelief that he would carry out such a heinous crime. He sentenced Nathaniel to life in prison without the possibility of parole. But that's not where the story ends. Samantha's parents created the What's My Name organization to make sure that what happened to their daughter never happens to anyone else ever again. Samantha was a native of New Jersey, and the New Jersey governor signed legislation to protect rideshare users with better signage through Sammy's Law, which was nearly passed nationally in 2020. The What's My Name organization continues to advocate for its passage on a national level. The delay has to do with litigation stemming from whether or not rideshare drivers are employees or independent contractors. The main goal of the foundation was education to the acronym SAMI, which stands for Stop and Review the App's Safety Features, Ask the Driver What's My Name, Match the Make, Model, and License of the Car to the one on the app, and Inform. Inform a friend about the trip details through the app's share status. Additional safety tips can be found on the What's My Name website, which is whatsmyname.org. Thank you all so much for listening to this week's episode. We will see you next week.
Crime Salad is a Weird Salad production.
Are you kidding me? That was perfect.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique, studio plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your studio plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
This Independence Day, wrap yourself in comfort and freedom with Minky Couture. From stars, stripes, and snuggles to cozy classics, our luxury blankets are proudly made to comfort. Whether you're watching fireworks or hosting backyard barbecues, be proud to be cozy all summer long. Celebrate comfort. Celebrate freedom. Celebrate you.
Shop now at minkycouture.com and make your 4th of July unforgettably cozy.